The Ticket. Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side. Struggling with my voice. Ira, I'm taking a swig of tea. And then, see, every time I take a swig of tea, I get a little boost.
Let me just say, it's kind of like Sam right now is kind of like, you know, playing with a thumb in a cast at running back.
Right. Hey, man. Hey, you got to gut it out.
Running backs need hands. Broadcasters need voices.
Had to gut it out on a Monday, you know, because the Buckeyes had a lot to say. So I had to show up on the postgame show and give it to them. You know, I did. I just posted the Hey Buckeyes clip on Twitter, the separated clip. It was 2 hours where we went in on the Buckeyes, but the open, just the 12-minute open, Hey Buckeyes open, is on YouTube right now on the YouTube page, so be sure to check it out. Putting some clips on Twitter, but I need my teammates to pick me up. Teammates like Ira, of course, who's the number one teammate, but then the teammate on the phone right now, the mayor of Michigan Twitter, who has to be feeling real good about it, my man, Scott Bell. Scott, how are you doing this morning?
Sam, I am doing fantastic. Pass me the baton. I will call off for the rest of the day. We can lock Devin out of the studio for the 9 o'clock hour, and I will just I will talk for the next 12 hours straight because I have plenty to say after a game and a weekend like that.
Yeah, man. All right, so I don't want to editorialize. Just give me your thoughts on the game as it unfolded. What were you thinking in the first half, and when, if at all, did that feeling start to change?
Heading into the game, I predicted an Ohio State win. 20 minutes into the game, I was even more confident that Michigan was not going to win. Like, my head had already shifted to, running through scenarios in my head, hey, if this is a close loss, who's going to have to lose for Michigan to sneak into the CFP as an 11-1 team? Like when Corm wasn't going to play, or when he gave it a try and it was clear he wasn't going back into the game. First couple of possessions on offense, you weren't moving the ball. It seemed like every Ohio State drive, even when Michigan would stop them, it seemed like it took all the effort just to do that. And I had very little confidence that was going to be a Michigan win. And for to get to two big plays and to keep it close at halftime, I was like, okay, like great effort there. I still didn't really see a pass to victory the way Michigan wasn't running. That stat of 20 straight years of the team winning the running game, I think, is very telling. And Ohio State dominated the running game in the first half. So once Michigan started getting a little bit of daylight on the ground, you get that Loveland touchdown, you force that punt early in the second half of Ohio State, you start believing a little bit. And I think when it really flipped for me was that 7.5 minute drive where Michigan needed to answered it killed the clock, and JJ McCarthy made some big plays with his arms, some plays with his legs, and, you know, the rest is history. So I could not have ever imagined Michigan would end up winning the way it did in the second half. 28-3 is absolutely insane, especially all the intangibles at play. But this is one prediction I am thoroughly happy to be wrong on.
Yeah, man. And so it was amazing because I look at the first half, and their ability to slow the run down. And I thought it had more to do with Blake being out and Donovan being limited and really concentrating on that hand and handling the football. He couldn't get into moves. You could tell he was catching the football or taking a handoff. He was focusing on first handling the ball and then protecting that hand. It wasn't until deeper in the game where you could see him get more comfortable with it. But initially, he wasn't seeing moves. He wasn't anticipating moves and seeing holes before they developed, you know, that instinctive running. He couldn't run instinctively, which was a problem because on that second drive, there were two huge holes that if it's Blake or Donovan, you know, they're probably still running. And fortunately, he was able to gut it out and keep playing in the second half and exploit those runs. But Ohio State, it wasn't a sign to me that they were that different. But Michigan, they were able to exploit the other weakness. And this is the thing that jumps out to me, Scott. They came out, Ohio State did, and tried to play out of character. They play way more man than they're accustomed to playing. Way more cover one and cover zero. It was unbelievable to see them try that, and Michigan made them pay.
Yeah, Michigan, and it's kind of the program's identity the last couple of years is Michigan's going to beat you with their best, and Michigan didn't have to have all these smoke and mirrors, all this exotic different things, surprises. Yeah, there were some fun wrinkles like the Mullings pass in the second half and some things like that, but Michigan won by being Michigan, and Ohio State tried to win by being someone else. And the fact of the matter is, Michigan on offense, when it came down to it, it ended up letting Ohio State dictate how Michigan was going to do it, but Michigan did it in a quote-unquote Michigan way either way. When Ohio State decided to stack the box, you get these two long Cornelius Johnson touchdowns, you get Loveland breaking free in the second half there, and J.J. connecting on those throws that he really needed to connect on when it mattered the most, and he absolutely did. And then when you get Ohio State finally making some of those adjustments, all of a sudden that 150-10 rushing advantage Ohio State had at halftime vanished, because obviously those two Donovan Edwards touchdowns as the punctuation were huge and were a lion's share of his yards. But prior to that, Michigan was finally moving the ball running too. And I think those were very key in the second half, even before those home runs on that 7.5-minute drive I was kind of talking about earlier.
Yeah, man. And so the gutsy performances, though. Let's start off first. We talk about the legacy-building moment this was for J.J. McCarthy. They said, you're going to have to beat us, and he did. This was a lot more football left for J.J. McCarthy to play. But I said after the game, the legend of J.J. McCarthy started Saturday in Columbus, and I don't think that was hyperbole.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Yeah, and there's no coming back from this for J.J. Like, this, he has made this step up, and he's not going to be the J.J. McCarthy you saw prior to this, after this. You walk into the shoe, you win the way you did, and your floor is so much higher now. Just the calmness he had early in the game, the poise on that first Cornelius Johnson touchdown. I mean, he's got three Buckeyes running right at him, and he's standing in the pocket. He's firing it in there, And that really changed the game at that point, because up until then it was just Ohio State across the board. But the poise he has to stand in, to run when he had to, comparing and contrasting him and C.J. Stroud in terms of running when it was time for a quarterback to run, embracing contact and running right into Ohio State players when it happened. J.J. McCarthy became that five-star quarterback that's going to win games, not just manage games on Saturday. And I think you're going to see a different JJ from this point on, because you don't just sort of step back to being that guy that doesn't lose games after a thing like this. I think you're going to continue to see that star be made and that star rise going forward now.
All right, and then Donovan Edwards, Scott, man, I mean – again, you could see the hand was a problem initially. He couldn't run like Donovan Edwards is accustomed to running, and he went and found something. I don't know how he found the comfort level. I don't know where he went in his mind to get it right, where he wasn't thinking about it and was still able to secure the football and do what he can do. But, man, he came up huge. Another player who I thought had a legacy-building moment, and in one of the gutsiest performances I think we've seen from a player in a Michigan uniform by Donovan Edwards.
Without a doubt. You have your Biakabatuka, your Haskins, and kind of your Perry moments in the last quarter century or so in this rivalry. But Edwards is on the Mount Rushmore for those two. I think he's probably there in a vacuum when you don't even consider the injury things. But the fact that his dominant arm is basically out of play, like he's carrying it in his non-dominant hand. He's doing it with Blake Corum on the sidelines, and in just how big of an issue that was in terms of how Michigan got there, what that means for morale, and how needed it was for Donovan Edwards to have a game like he did, and to top 200 yards, to have those two huge touchdowns, absolutely huge. And for these two legacy performances that you're talking about to come from true sophomores is both indicative of how big they were this year, like both of these guys making really their first contributions in the game. And it's a great sign to come because they're both back. They're both going to be leaders on this team next year.
Yeah, man, it's amazing. Now let's talk about this defense. Because so much from Urban Meyer to the entire Fox crew, except for Charles Woodson. Let's give Charles some credit. I mean, he was in a den of enemies. They had clearly spent time in the Ohio State, in the Woody Hayes Center, getting everything they were going to do to Michigan in this game, right? Didn't spend as much time on Michigan. Because they gave the defense no credit either. And what we saw all season long, especially the second half of this season, about this team and how they come out and shut the door in the second half of games, this was the most impressive instance of it. On the road against, on paper, the best offense that they might see all season, and Michigan made them look pedestrian. 1-for-7 on third down in the second half. 3 points. Scott, this was an unbelievable showing by Jesse Minter and crew.
3 points in the entire second half. I mean, you talk about a second half masterclass heading into this game, and I think of the 2021 edition of the game where Michigan just blew Ohio State's doors off. And I feel like this really did trump it. For C.J. Stroud, perfect weather conditions. You have Marvin Harrison there. Everything's on the table there, and for Michigan to allow 3 points in that second half is just a legendary performance by everyone. You obviously, Mikey Sainristil's pass breakup in the end zone is getting a lot of the credit it deserves, and I feel like that was the play of the game. But you've also got some unsung interceptions, turnovers being forced. You should have had a third with Iabioki's incredible sack that really could have gotten Michigan to 50 if it was a return for a touchdown. But this defense across the board did everything it needed to do and then some. And I think obviously these players made big standout performances, but a lot of credit goes to Jesse Minter and the adjustments he made on Saturday and what he's done all season long. I think this is the best second half team in the country by a pretty considerable margin. And knowing how important these second halves are, I don't think it's that unreasonable to start thinking this might be the best team in the country, just given how much weight needs to be given to these performances in crunch time.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
Oh, Scott, they seem shook to their core about what this might mean because they were supposed to get better. They were supposed to be better. Scott, all they did was get better at getting their asses kicked. That's what essentially happened. So all of these changes Ryan Day made, and this is the result. Now you're questioning whether he can flip this around. You got Buckeyes, former players, calling them out openly about what did you do to this program? Yeah, what? Let's bring Urban back. You actually have them out there saying that audibly. Fans in the stands chanting, "Bring back Urban." It feels like I asked you this before. if Ryan Day loses this game, is he going to be on the hot seat? Now, they aren't about to fire Ryan Day. But, man, it feels like the heat is being turned up.
It really feels like a shift in the rivalry. Last year's game was incredible. It meant a lot to the program. But if Ohio State comes in and takes care of Michigan this year, all of a sudden, okay, you can circle that and maybe think of it as an anomaly. For Michigan to win the way it did last year, make the comments it did last year about Ryan Day in third base, about Ohio State's toughness. I think there was a little trepidation among the fan base, myself included, that, okay, Ohio State's been channeling this and they're going to just unleash it on Saturday. And you look at what Hartline said before the game at the pep rally and what these people are saying. And, hey, we've just been listening to this for 365 days, but we're going to show you when our toughness gets questioned. We're going to show you who the tough team is. And we found out who the tough team was. And it was the same team that was a tough team in 2021. The only difference is that Michigan just turned it up a little more and won even more convincingly in a tougher venue. So it just feels different. And I think there's the psychological edge. And for Michigan to go and plant the flag on the field, and when Jim Harbaugh is asked about it after the game, there's no backing down for him. He's looking for a place to put that in Michigan's football museum. I think that just shows the swagger with this team, the confidence where they feel they are in this rivalry right now. And it's a complete reversal from sort of where the psychological edge was a decade, even a half decade earlier.
All right, we got to get out of here, Scott. Just a quick word on the matchup in the Big Ten championship game between Michigan and Purdue. Just break it down, break down the Boilermakers. How do you see this one going?
I was asked which of the three opponents I'd prefer right in the aftermath of Michigan's loss. And I said Purdue, just because I think a matchup there is a little less ripe for an upset. I think Illinois or Iowa might have shortened the game, had fewer possessions. And I think those are the types of games where Michigan might be more likely to lose than against Purdue. But I mean, hey, they call them they don't call them the spoiler makers for no reason. They've been known to have some upsets. So Michigan is going to have some health concerns with some players, and but the fact of the matter is they are going to be comfortable favorites. I think they showed last year against Iowa that they understand the assignment. They're not going to have that letdown, and that you need to win that Big Ten title to keep things rolling. So I'll defer to JJ McCarthy in his post game interview where, hey, we're not done yet. And I think the team understands that, and I think they'll show that on Saturday.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot for your time, man. Enjoy your time. These Buckeyes are amazing, conspicuously absent. Are you noticing that?
I'll go searching for them on social media. I'm certainly not seeing the chatter that I was seeing before the game.
All right, Scott, appreciate it. We got to get out of here so we can get to the break and bring on the Monday morning quarterback who's laughing at me. I need you to pick me up. Need you to pick me up, bro. I had a lot to say. So you got to say it for me today, DG. You got to say it for me today. All right, bro. This coat on another level. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side with the Monday morning quarterback here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan sports, Ann Arbor Accumulus Station.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.